how much money do you think you need to have to be able to happily turn down a $50 million Facebook deal?
Exactly.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Watch Time podcast. Today, we are going deep on the updates on the Dr. Disrespect situation, the interviews he did, and what it means for the streaming platforms. And then we're going to be doing a big deep dive into what creators we think have the most potential long term. If we could invest in a creator today, who are the people that we think are going to be there in 5 to 10 years? I'm super excited to get into it, talking about X Factor and which talent have it and which talent don't. But firstly, Elliot, how was your week?
It was good. It was good. I'm trying to think what I've actually got done this week. I feel like actually not that much. I've just been, we had the Cars update for Fortnite. It was supposed to be the Cars update and that didn't come. So I spent all of yesterday sitting around waiting for an update that I thought I was going to be able to make a ton of epic content on, and then nothing happened. Epic loves to tease.
Classic Fortnite.
Classic Fortnite.
Epic 2020.
Genuinely. Yeah. How about you?
My week has been bloody hectic. We had a bunch of campaigns going on. Obviously I couldn't talk about it last week, but EA released Rocket Arena, which we did a heap of work on. We've had a couple of big projects in the works, which is exciting, but, definitely takes it out of you a little bit, but keen to be back here. But Elliot, tell me your thoughts. Dr. Disrespect has spoken, guys. Breaking news.
Yeah,
it's been a couple weeks since we heard.
I feel like it's been like 4 weeks. I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know. It's been like 4 weeks. I feel like time has just been
standing still in quarantine.
Yeah, but also time is standing still in my mentality of wanting to know what the hell happened with Dr. Disrespect.
Google it every morning. Every morning I wake up and I search Dr. Disrespect on Twitter and see what the latest updates are.
And the latest updates are almost always, we don't know anything new. But what he did do a few days ago now is he basically went at this, like, and it was weird. I've got so many questions about this, and I think we're going to go into what it means and some of the big outcomes that came from it. But it was weird because he basically went out and did this huge media blitz. He did this thing where he was like doing interviews with all these major outlets, and he released like a music video sort of where it was just kind of him doing his like classic style of music, just like staring into nothing. But then he did this huge media blitz where he went and did interviews with like article after article after article and publication after publication and publication. And he had his like publicist there with him clearly, who was like vetting questions.
And basically said nothing.
But this is the weird thing. He went and did interviews, and obviously, oh my God, Dr. Disrespect is going doing interviews with everyone. He's going to be coming out and spilling the tea. He's going to be like, Twitch really fucked me over and this is how they did it. Or this is exactly why I'm innocent. Or this is what I'm accused of and this is why they're liars. I have the receipts.
This is my next move.
He basically went and did interviews and was just like, yeah, so I've been really enjoying some time off streaming, and like, oh, so like, why were you banned? And they're like, can't really get into it, you know? Like, but you know what I noticed is so interesting is that, so whenever the question came up about, you know, why were you banned? Why aren't you streaming? Whatever's going on there, it was always dodged. He would literally always dodge. He'd be like, I can't answer that, or his publicist would intervene, or he'd cite that his lawyer said not to talk about it. But interestingly, he would always say, because you know when he first got banned, he put out that tweet being like, Twitch has not given me the official reason for banning me. But you can very much tell in these interviews, he knows why he's been banned. He dodges it and he says, look, I'm still not 100% certain, or this or that or that. He definitely knows, and because if he didn't, it would be an absolute outrage and he'd be blowing Twitch up. But it's clearly still something that he's trying to avoid, which makes all these interviews so interesting, because he didn't come out and say, okay, Twitch has banned me, I'm now going to go stream on YouTube as of today. Like, he didn't use it as a kick-on to launch into his new streaming career on a new platform. He didn't use it to clear the air about anything that's going on. He didn't use it to spill the tea. He didn't use it to send a message to his grandma. He didn't use it to do anything. It was like a really mundane coffee catch-up with a friend, but where your friend is like, don't ask me about my life. I just want you to see me. I just wanted to see you, but like, don't ask me anything.
I totally agree. I think it was completely bizarre, and I found it on the whole, very weird. Usually when you do like a PR run or you take a bunch of interviews, you're usually doing it with the intention of something, whether that's like pushing a certain narrative, announcing that you're going to do something. Most people don't just do an interview for the sake of doing an interview. Like, even if it feels like it, there's probably an underlying narrative weaved in there somewhere. And I am still not exactly sure what the purpose of all of these interviews were. And I don't even think it made him come off in a great light, to be honest. For me, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Inevitably, these questions were going to come up as to why he thought he was banned. And the interview answer that I found particularly interesting was one where they mentioned the fact that there's obviously been a resurgence of the Me Too movement in the gaming industry. There's been a number of streamers that have come under attack for potentially sexually predatory behavior or taking advantage of people. And they asked if they thought that he had anything, that his ban had anything to do with that. And his publicist jumped in very, very quickly and was basically just like, all we can say is Twitch hasn't given us a reason as to why he was banned. They haven't told us why he was banned. And that's all our legal team is going to approve us to say. And I was like, that's a bit bloody weird to me. You would think, for me, if I was someone and I had never given anyone any reason to think that I would behave in a sexually predatory way, I would be very confident saying that. If someone asked or suggested that that could be a reason why I had suffered a major consequence from literally the provider of my job, basically, I'd be saying, look, Twitch hasn't told me why I was banned, but to the best of my knowledge, I've never given anyone any reason to think that. But he didn't say that. He fully dodged it.
Yeah.
Fully dodged it and let his publicist cut in, which just, it just doesn't look good for me. I found it very, very weird. It rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know about it.
But, okay, I'll tell you what the one interesting thing that did come out of it. I mean, before I go into that, I will say that something has absolutely happened. He's absolutely done something that is, or at least there are very, I would say, and they must be very solid accusations for all of these things to happen. Something has definitely happened for not only Twitch to drop him, but like we discussed last week or the week before, his management company dropping him as well. I think that is huge. That is key. Your management does not drop you, especially if you're a huge client like he is, without a very specific reason. So, and also, yeah, once again, the way he's answering the questions are very much like, he is saying that, yes, Twitch has not specifically outlined to me in an email exactly the reason for their action. But he's also not saying, I have no idea why I was banned. It's completely a mystery to me. And if he didn't know, and he did get randomly banned, like think about if any creator got randomly banned off YouTube and never had anything said about it, they would be going off. They would be literally,
you'd be wanting to find out. They would be like,
you would be tweeting every hour of every day, how can you do this? Like, what is, like, how can a platform function this way? You need to give accountability. Anyway,
he knows what he did wrong. He knows what he did wrong, and they're not pushing the issue with Twitch because they don't want an answer, because then they can't run the narrative that Twitch hasn't told them why he was banned. That's what I believe.
Well, also, I'm sure, I reckon Twitch has also got their own legal reasons for not wanting to message him saying that this is the reason we banned you. Because say in like a one in a million case where you know, there was like an accusation that he committed some kind of crime and Twitch was like, we banned him for that. And they tell him we banned you for this. But then he somehow manages to like prove that didn't happen. Then Twitch could somehow be liable for, you know, something. So yeah. I reckon Twitch is just like, hey, look, like, as long as we don't say anything, it's our platform and they ultimately have the final discretion. So if they don't say anything, they're kind of in the clear. That's what I'm guessing is happening on Twitch's end. But
yeah.
But the interesting thing that did come out of it, because, I mean, if anything, this interview just really honed in on the fact that something's up, and I once again don't understand why he did the damn interview. But is that he did say is there was a question, and it said the person asked him, it seems crazy to me that Twitch would ban one of its most famous popular streamers and then not even tell them what they did wrong. He said, yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing to think about. Obviously, for legal counsel, I have to be careful here. But I can say, however, that I will not be returning to Twitch. So, I mean, that's it. So, it sounds like no matter what happens, no matter what the outcome is here, whether or not this stuff stays private forever and it never leaks, or whether, he is proven something that happened, or whether he's proven innocent, doesn't matter. He will not be going back to Twitch. And I think this is something that I'm super interested to dive into, mm-hmm. because we've talked about in previous weeks when Mixer shut down that Twitch really burnt their bridge with Ninja as well. Obviously, used to be the biggest streamer on the platform. They lost Shroud. Dr. Disrespect was probably now next to like XQC and a couple of other people, the biggest streamer on the platform. And really, if you look at Twitch, if you look at a snapshot of Twitch, you know, a year and a half ago, right before all the Mixer stuff happened, then their biggest streamers were Shroud, Ninja, Dr. Disrespect. And basically in the space of, you know, no time at all, they lost all of these people, all their biggest, their top three, their top five, roughly. And now all those people are actually stuck in this weird limbo where they're looking about where to go next. Now, the one person that could actually go back to Twitch and I don't think has an issue with them is Shroud. But I think what's super interesting is Doc has now stated he's definitely not going back no matter what. We know for a fact Ninja doesn't really like Twitch after what they did when he went to Mixer. Is that I think there's a lot of like ducks lining up right here for YouTube, because it's no longer like a few months ago where it was like, oh, you know, you could negotiate a deal with Twitch or YouTube or Mixer, or, you know, like there was a
Facebook.
Lot of like, yeah, there was a lot of like balls up in the air. But now I think that realistically, if Doc and Ninja are looking at places to go, unless they somehow find a way to get over their beef with Twitch, which I don't think they will, they really only have the option of YouTube. YouTube is the only platform that can support a creator of their size and actually give them the viewership and the support and the monetization that they're going to need to actually capitalize on what they're doing.
Really? I think the YouTube team is quietly probably very happy right now. I'm happy for them. I think the guys at YouTube Gaming are awesome. I really like them. I hope to see more competition from them in the future. I think it's great for everyone.
Yeah, I think realistically, YouTube streaming could be about to, they didn't pay the 50-60 million for Ninja, but I reckon that they could be about to get two of the biggest streamers in the industry basically for free. I don't know. They might give them some kind of like little sweetheart, but whatever it is, it would be pennies on the dollar of if they were actually trying to buy them out at what the market rate was when they went to something like Mixer.
I agree. I think it's amazing how quickly the scene has changed over the last 12 months, and that just 1 year ago, the amount of dollars that were flying around to obtain exclusivity over that caliber of creators was so big. And now, you know, in such a short period of time, it's kind of whittled itself down to two main players. One of the main players has kind of cut themselves out of a couple of these major creators. And YouTube, therefore, potentially is about to win some of the biggest viewership in gaming without probably needing to pay even a fraction of what they were going to pay a year ago. I'd be really surprised if they weren't. I wouldn't believe that they're not talking to Ninja, Shroud, maybe the Doc, depending on whether or not the circumstances are there and what they know. I think that they will probably be making offers just because for their confidence they want to have the exclusivity and it looks great for them. But yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be getting offered the realm of deals that were being offered by Mixer and the other platforms even just a year ago.
No, I agree. I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see where they go. And I genuinely just don't know where they're going to go. I think that it's going to be hard because I feel like they've got so much like expectation at this stage where they're going to you know, like they've seen the deals going around. They know how much money they're making on Twitch. As much as I think YouTube is making really, really good like steps forward, I think that, I think as much as YouTube is making really, really good steps forward, they're still, they still don't quite have the same monetization level. And I think that's the one big issue that they really, really have to fix is the fact that they, like, you know, Dr. Disrespect, if he goes and he streams on YouTube, he is not going to be making nearly as much money as he was if he was streaming on Twitch. So it's kind of a question of, you know, number one, what does he do? Can he go into YouTube content creation? I just don't think that, like, as in, like, become, like, a VOD creator primarily, because I just don't think that that's his thing. He didn't, unlike Ninja, Doc's not in a spot, and I think this is interesting, is that Ninja got the $50, $60 million bag from Mixer. He also had a huge time where he was making just obscene amounts of money and was doing ridiculously well and basically could, you know, make just dumb amounts of money, basically. He's, Ninja's probably worth $100 million. He's at a point where he could very easily just probably be like, you know what? I'm down to just chill. I'm going to go. I might, you know, do the occasional stream on YouTube, but I don't want to be committed to doing 200 hours a month or anything crazy. I just want to, like, have a bit of fun, make a few videos, and enjoy life. Whereas the Doc, I think, obviously incredibly well off, done some big sponsor deals, but I don't think he's at a point where he's like, okay, I've really, like, I hit my peak, and now I'm, like, in my chill part of my career. I think Doc was at a real, like, you know, he was still on a very high level, and he hadn't yet sold out, quote unquote, or like cashed in on that. So I think he definitely needs a platform where he can continue making a lot of money.
How much money do you think you need to have to be able to happily turn down a $50 million Facebook deal?
Exactly. I feel like...
For Ninja, like that's, he's turning down a huge amount of money from Facebook. Yeah. How much, like, this is just like a funny question, but like, how much money do you reckon you need to be happy to just do whatever you want?
You need...
not even care about the dollars.
Yeah, you need a bit of money. You need a bit of money for that. You need... oh, my God.
How much would it take? How much would it take for you to turn down a $50 million Facebook gaming offer?
Oh, I think I'd have to be worth about $100 million. Like, I mean, I just think ultimately, because it's like, it's streaming. Like, you can ultimately, like, not that streaming's not important, but ultimately you can always, it's not like you're only ever doing content in that one spot. You can still do VOD content on YouTube. I mean, it's just $50 million is such an obscene amount of money. It's obscene. That, you know, and once again, I can't even
conceptualize.
I was never primarily a streamer. So I don't 100% know, but it's obviously harder. It's like, if I were to be like, oh, do you want to move all your VOD content to a different platform? That would be a huge decision for me, because I'm primarily about making videos.
Huge.
So I'm conscious of the fact that for a streamer, that is slightly different, but it's still a bit interesting. You know, like, I don't know, like, it's still interesting that $50 million is so dumb. And apparently it could have been even more than that. And just not jumping on that is just seems insane to me.
Insane. Anyway, time will tell. I hope it's a dub for the YouTube gaming team. And I'm still fucking fascinated about what happened to the Doc, and I want to know. Okay, moving on though. I saw a tweet on Twitter this week that really got me thinking, and it got me thinking about a lot of things that are happening in the social media world right now. The tweet was by Jackson Dahl, who is a founding member of the 100 Thieves team, and he tweeted, "If you could buy stock in any individual over the next 20 years, who would you choose?" And I read this and I was like, I love this question. I think it's brilliant. And especially within our industry, I think it's super, super interesting because we work with a lot of really young people, a lot of very, very talented people, both in the creator scene and the business side of things. And I want to know, Elliot, who you think, if you could buy stock in any individual, someone in our industry, who would it be?
So I put a lot of thought into this, and it was basically, it basically came down to a few interesting points for me. I think there's a lot of people in doing YouTube and people in this industry, obviously, who make amazing, incredible content, and they monetize that content pretty well. You know, and I think when I think about that, I probably think largely about David Dobrik. And when I speak here, I'm not actually speaking to what their you know, like, not, it's not me ruling out their potential to do anything in the future, but it's just what I know and understand about them right now. And when I think amazing content creators, people who make like incredible stuff, I think about I basically think about like people like David Dobrik. You know, they create incredible viral content that just does obscenely well, and you know, and people just love, tens of millions of views over and over and over again. But I don't know if that makes him a creator that I'd want to like buy shares in necessarily and invest in the future of. Because for me, the creators that I find super impressive in that respect are the ones who find ways to really kind of like, you know, they don't even like, I ultimately, you know what it comes down to? I think David Dobrik makes the content he makes largely because he really likes making that content. I think he just loves, I think he likes being funny. I think he likes being entertaining. I think he likes seeing people enjoy his content. And I think you can see that through almost everything he does. His videos are quite short. They're not really playing to the algorithm. They're definitely not playing to the monetization in the algorithm given by the kind of content that he includes in it. And obviously, if I'm buying shares in someone, it really does come down to how focused on revenue are they? Because that's what you're buying shares in, not how much you like the person. For me, a creator that embodies, you know, not saying they don't love the content they make. In fact, I actually think they really, really do. But where I know for a fact from speaking to them and speaking to people about them and everything, where they really do take that seriously is someone like MrBeast, where I know for a fact he takes every element of YouTube incredibly seriously. So he's doing everything from optimizing his, you know, kind of like, he will upload a video a week before that video is supposed to go live. He'll then look through the video and look at the auto captions that YouTube places on it. Because YouTube will misplace auto captions all the time. It might accidentally think you swore, even if you didn't. It might think you talked about something controversial, even if you didn't. He'll comb through those captions with a team, obviously. He's probably not the one doing a lot of this. He goes through those captions with a team, analyzes it, identifies where there's issues, corrects those issues, re-uploads it to make sure that YouTube's not doing anything so that there's not even a question on YouTube's end that he is uploading absolute A-grade brand safe content. Then he sets the video live, and through that, he gets some of the craziest CPMs on YouTube. On top of that, I think that if you look at him as a business, like, he is constantly looking for ways, and I think you and I know a few people like this who they don't just see their channel as making videos. They're always looking for ways to expand and get bigger, whether that's doing their own merch or expanding into other businesses or starting apps or partnerships or pretty much whatever it is. I just think MrBeast is someone who not only when he's looking at the industry, he's always looking big. He's looking to go like big, but he's also really just trying to like, you know, think of ways to expand and also do it intelligently. Yeah. I think he thinks big with his content. I think he thinks big with, you know, like, I think a big thing that indicates that to me is someone who's willing to hire a team. When you're a YouTuber, yes, it can be very hard to relinquish control. But ultimately, if you want to grow and you want to get huge, you need, like, literally, YouTube channels are basically like TV shows. You need like a producer. You need multiple editors. You need a thumbnail maker who's designing thumbnails. You need that person be designing A and B thumbnails that you can then compare and then do trial runs of. You need someone who's combing through your analytics, identifying which parts of videos are, you know, getting the most engagement, which you can then go and like lean on more in the future to get your views up. MrBeast embodies every single part of that. I think he makes good content. I actually don't think his content is, I mean, purely for me, I don't think a lot of his content is actually amazing, at least for what, at least relative to a lot of what some people make on YouTube, you know? I think if you were to go and you were to compare the raw quality of like a David Dobrik to a MrBeast, David Dobrik is obviously way more minute by minute refined in what ends up in the final product. But I think that MrBeast, like, he runs it and this isn't at all to say he's not passionate about it, because he definitely is. He's more passionate than anyone I know on YouTube. He runs it like a business, which is smart. He has fun with it, but he is smart about it, and he builds a team around himself, and he's always looking to expand. And he's done that with starting a gaming channel. He's done that with so many things. And I think that he's the kind of person who also has a formula, the formula being I'm doing dumb stuff with dumb money, which has a lot of long-term potential.
I think I disagree with you in one place there, where you said to make it on YouTube, you need to view it as a business. I actually don't think you need to. I think it is possible to become a very, very successful creator and just purely focus on your content. But in terms of the question, who would I buy stock in over the next 20 years? Yes, I think to buy stock in someone, they need to view it as a business, because you can be the most amazing creator in the world, but it's like, how are you going to take that skill to the next level? And you can't scale your creator business without actually building a team around you. And this to me comes back to a conversation or an idea that I have around like X factor and talent that have an X factor. And I think there are multiple different types of X factor. I think some talent have an X factor when it comes purely to content. They are the most creative people. They have a feel for it. They have a way to create content. They have a sense of humor. They have an ability to connect with a broad audience that I think is next level and very, very rare. I truly think very few people have this. I feel like I've come across only a handful in my years working in the industry where I'm like, wow, this person truly has an X factor when it comes to creating content. Then I think there are the people that have an X factor when it comes to actually making it a business. And for me, there are two categories when it comes to this. There are the creators that are doing YouTube because they purely love the content creation and they're so passionate about what they're creating content in. And then there are the people that are, yes, equally probably passionate about the content, but they're also very passionate about growing something. And I have no doubt that if they weren't doing YouTube, they'd be growing something in another industry. And they're the people that I find really interesting. They're the people that I probably feel that I'd be more gravitated to buy stock in. And I think like you probably fall into that latter camp, Elliot. Like I think you obviously love content creation. I think you love gaming. You love what you do. But I would also say you're very, very passionate about the business side of YouTube. You're passionate about growing business. And I think that while you've been very successful in what you're doing now, I think you would be able to channel that energy into anything else that you were giving a go. And getting back to the point, though, a couple people I would buy equity in, I'd buy equity in you, Elliot. I think like you've got long-term potential. I think I see that in the way that you are a talented content creator, but I also think you're very, very talented at talking to different people in the ecosystem. You can talk to a brand really easily and articulate the value of what you're doing. You can understand what their priorities are and help them get to an outcome that's going to work for them. And you're passionate about building a business as well, both in your own channel and obviously you're invested in Click as well, which is super cool. For me, the other person that immediately jumps to mind is Preston. I speak to Preston and I'm just like,
TBNR frags for anyone who is wondering.
This guy knows what he's doing and he's got a vision for it. He has his hand in so many honeypots. I think he's very, very passionate about growing his team. He's diversified his content. He's got like 7 channels he's working on. He's got multiple peripheral businesses to his content. And I just think like if I could get stock in someone, he'd be, from a creator perspective, one of those people.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think he's someone who I always hear talk about expanding his business, doing other stuff, doing apps, merch in-house, expanding his team, all that kind of thing. I think if I self-criticize a bit, I think you're right. I do love growing things, and I do love the industry of YouTube as a whole. I think if I were an investor in myself, which I guess I am, so really, I probably should be doing this, but I always think about this, and for some reason I never do. I really should be doing more of the expanding on, like, production team side. Like, realistically, my team is two editors and a part-time thumbnail maker. And realistically, if I were, like, you know, an investor in myself, I'd be like, you need a production person. You need someone who's ideating content for you and like coordinating the editors with the thumbnail makers and basically expanding a lot more on that side, which I think is what Mr. Beast and Preston do. Obviously, like, I choose to put more of that business energy into, like, stuff like Click, because I personally find that more fun. But I think it's interesting, though. You're right. There's people who I think have, you know, they have the X factor in content, and then there's some people who have the, you know, like, the more business focus and drive. And I think the people that, you know, I would absolutely be wanting to, like, go and invest in are the people who have that point in the middle. And I think there's people who have the drive and the business sense who don't actually make the best content. And there's a few people I can probably think of. But because they have that business sense and that drive, and they really look at the analytics and they work so hard on their thumbnails and their titles and all of that, that they're able to actually do really well on YouTube because they play off that strength so hard. Then there's people who have the X factor on content, but I don't really know if they do the business area nearly as well. I want to say David Dobrik. I think actually, though, I'm sure there's a lot of business elements behind the scenes that we just don't see. But yeah, I would say
so few people have it, though. I would go on the record and say, like, I think very few people actually have the level of X factor that we're talking about, where I would buy stock in them over the next 20 years.
Yeah.
I think it's super rare. You see the end product of some really, really talented creators, but I don't think there are that many people I've met in the industry that I'm like, wow, yeah, like, you have the ability to actually transform this into something that's going to happen over the next 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm also really, really interested in the people more behind the scenes, probably because that's, like, more my job. But I think there are a couple of very, very talented, like, talent managers or people that are assisting in the creator space, like, building teams. And I think that's really interesting. I always sometimes think about, like, that saying that the coach will last longer than the player. And I was reading this actually about some talent managers in the music space and people that are really investing in those talent managers. One of them being Dre London, who's Post Malone's manager, who I actually met a few years ago really briefly. But basically people saying that they're invested in him because if you invest in a great coach, they'll find great players for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a really interesting sentiment as well.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I feel like that's a good place to leave it for today.
I like this episode. It was very quick fire. I think there was a lot of interesting stuff to cover. I think it was I think the Dr. Disrespect stuff is so interesting. I need to know, man. I need to know what happens. I can't deal with this. I'm just not good with it.
Patience is running very low.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll be super interesting to see what happens with all the Dr. Disrespect stuff over the next few weeks. Make sure you stay tuned to the podcast because you know we are always looking for a new excuse to talk about any kind of drama, and especially if it relates to Dr. Disrespect, and especially even more so if it relates to mysterious Twitch bans that no one knows the cause for. Yeah, but
all right.
Yeah.
We will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.